Hello and welcome to the Jake and Gino Show. My name is Gino Barbaro, one of the co-founders of Jake and Gino, and our guest today is Joey Coleman, an award-winning speaker and best-selling author. He shares his first 100 days methodology for improving customer and employee retention with organizations around the world like Volkswagen, Australia, and Zappos. In Joey's upcoming book, Never Lose an Employee Again, he details a framework that you can utilize to reduce turnover and increase employee engagement. Welcome to the show, Mr. Joey C.
Gino, it is a pleasure to be here. I love getting to hang out with you. I got to say, I'm missing Jake a little bit, but today it'll just be the Joey and Gino show instead of the Jake and Gino. So I'm going to do my best to channel my inner Jake, show up with enthusiasm and thoughtfulness the way he does, and look forward to a great conversation. Thanks for having me.
You are a three-timer on the show. I just want to let you know that. We've had you on two times before, and for everybody out there, I'm going to hold up the book on YouTube. Run to Amazon, throw it in your cart. Never lose a customer again. This actually revolutionized our business. Joey came down and did an event with us a few years ago, and we had a mess. We had customers coming on. We didn't know what phase they were in. Were we going to retain them? And the book really laid it out, and the work was amazing. We're going to talk about his second book today. But Joey, let's give the people a background of why did you write the book? How did you get into this? Because this 10 years ago was not even around. Like storytelling, it was just a new phase. What made you get into this subject?
Yeah, so I ran an ad agency for about 15 years. And while I was running the ad agency, one of our jobs was to drive new business for our clients, right? Get them clicks, mm-hmm. get them foot traffic, get them people to come become prospects and join the business and become customers. And we were really good at that. But what drove me insane is I would go back to those clients 3 months later, 6 months later, and I'd be like, all right, how's business? How are things going? We drove all these new clients. They'd be like, you know, it's kind of good, but we really haven't grown that much. I'm like, how are you not growing? We brought you qualified leads, people that were, you know, dead in on the target of who you wanted as customers. And when we got into the analytics, we realized that these new customers were leaving as quickly as they arrived. Somewhere between 20 and 70% of new customers will decide to stop doing business with you before the 100-day anniversary. 20 to 70% globally. It doesn't matter what industry you're in, big or small, product or service, online or offline, domestic or international, 20 to 70% quit before the 100-day anniversary. So what we did is we developed a methodology, a framework for thinking differently about the customer journey across 8 phases of their experience. And to your point, what can we do in each of those phases to identify where that individual customer is at on an individualized basis? And then create the type of interactions and create the type of remarkable experiences that will propel them to the next phase, which is a deeper, more meaningful, more long-lasting relationship with us. So for, you know, 20 plus years, that's what I've been doing on the customer side. And I had been in the customer experience business for about 5 minutes when I realized that you can't have a great customer experience if you don't have great employees to deliver it. And so the first book was all about customer experience. This new book, Never Lose an Employee Again, is all about the employee experience. And I really see them, Gino, as two sides of the same coin. If you improve one, you necessarily improve the other. You've got great customers, your people are going to love coming to work. You got great employees, they're going to love taking great care of your great customers. And it's a symbiotic relationship. They feed off each other. However, if you've got employees who hate coming to work, they don't like their job, they're miserable, they're not engaged, what's that going to do to your customers? It's going to bring them right down to that same type of emotional level and frustration and irritation and anger and annoyance. Mm-hmm. These things feed on each other. So we got to pay attention to both the customer experience and the employee experience.
Joey, can you give us an example of maybe a company that you admire or you've actually been thinking about as you're writing this book from the customer journey experience? I know if Jake was here, Jake, you're not here. I know you'd say Chick-fil-A. We're not going to talk about Chick-fil-A today, okay? I know. I just got to throw that in there for you, brother. I miss you. What company do you look at that go, wow, they've got it nailed on the customer and or the employee? If you can give us an example for both.
You know, Gino, there are so many. My first book had 46 case studies. The second book has over 50 case studies from all 7 continents. Wow. Businesses, small, medium, and large. Ones you've heard of, ones you've never heard of. But your answer brings, or your question brings up a thought in my mind about the kind of white whale, if you will, Moby Dick reference to the case study I wanted to get. When I sat down to write Never Lose an Employee Again, I thought about the brand that exists on the planet that I'm a gigantic fan of. I love this brand. I love everything they do. And I had heard that they had remarkable employee experiences. I'd never worked for them, but I'd heard this word on the street that they were really brilliant when it came to the employee experience too. And that brand is Lego. Have you ever built with Legos? You know, we've had the thing, or you have kids. I know you've got a bunch of kids, Gino. I've got kids too, and lots of nieces and nephews. I'm also what they call an AFOL, an adult fan of Lego, right? It's ridiculous. I got Legos in the background here if you're watching the video, Lego cityscapes of various places around the world. And so I thought it would be amazing to see what the Lego experience was like. And so through a great friend of mine, was able to get connected to the head of people at Lego, did an interview with him. He then was kind enough to introduce me to other people on his team that I did interviews with. And at every step of the new employee journey, Gino, they do remarkable things. But if I may, let me tell you one quick story of something that applies to everyone who's listening. Everyone who's listening has had this scenario. And I'd be willing to bet that the way that Lego approaches it is dramatically different than the way you're currently approaching it. But I want you to shamelessly steal this idea. So when we're interviewing somebody for a position, right, we narrow the field of candidates. And usually we get down to two or three top candidates. And we know these are the ones, so we're going to bring them in for the final round of interviews. We're going to go through the interviews and, oh, they're all pretty good, right? They made the cut. They're amazing folks. And we get to the end and we have to pick someone. And what happens in the typical business is we make the offer to the one we picked, and to the other two, we say, hey, it was really close. You did a great job, but sorry, no dice. We don't have anything for you. That's not how Lego does it. What Lego does is they get all the way, they pick the one who is going to get the offer, and they send that person a box. And in this box are Lego sets with a message of come build your future career with us. And there's all kinds of material, and it's exciting, right? It's Lego, it's fun, it's playful, it's engaging, it's interactive. And that's amazing for the person who gets the job offer. But they also send boxes to the other two candidates who didn't make the cut. And they say, hey, while we didn't get the chance to offer you this position, we'd love to stay in touch. You're amazing. We still see a future for you to build your career at Lego. And boy, we'd love to stay in regular contact. And we're going to be reaching out from you from time to time. And please reach out to us from time to time because we want to stay in communication. You're amazing. Now, here's what happens, Gino. Every once in a while, when we're hiring someone, we make a mistake. We think that they're the right person. They go through all the interviews. We think, oh, we've got it. And then they get on the job for about 2 or 3 months. And we're like, oh, man, I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know if it was just they were so nice in the interview. I don't know if they just said the right things. I don't know if it was because I had lunch and it was really delicious and I interviewed them right after lunch and they're the one I picked. I don't know what it is, but they're not the right person. And we have to let that person go, or they leave because they know they're not the right pick. You know what Lego does then? They call those other two people. And those other two people are super excited to be back in consideration. Why? Because when they told them no, they didn't burn the bridge. They stayed in contact. They let them have a remarkable experience of being told no instead of the remarkable experience of being told yes, which made them more likely to say yes when the wheel rolled around and there was a better position in the future. Here's my question to everybody listening or watching. What happened to those other amazing candidates that you didn't make the offer to? Did you stay in touch with them? Did you come back to them the next time you had an open position? Did you continue to foster the type of relationship that ideally you were fostering in the hiring process so that when a new position or a new opportunity came available, you already had a bench ready to come in and play?
That's a great point, because the cost that you're saving by not having to go out and market, number one. And number two, I need to say something about Lego. In the age of computer and Meta and doing everything, they are a physical, think of the physicality of it. I know we've grown up into where we've shared that experience with our children, but that's an amazing company that's built. And I think they've built that through their customer journey, through their employee journey. And that translates into any product you want to sell, whether it's online, whether it's a physical product. So kudos to them. Now, this part of the show, I want everyone to pick up pen and paper because it's like we have a little meat and potatoes here. I want Joey to go through that the eight phases, and I want everyone to really diagnose. I want you to buy the book, first of all, but from right here, as you start listening to Joey through those eight phases, maybe you can diagnose yourself and say, I'm weak on the third one, or I can do better on the eighth one, or I don't even know what these phases are. I don't know what I should do. So Joey's going to lay them out for us right now.
I love it, Gino. So I believe there are eight phases to the employee journey, and each of these start with the letter A. The idea is not to confuse you, but rather to say, if you were to give your employees a report card after they went through the entire journey with you, they'd be giving you straight A's. You firing on all cylinders, you're getting high marks. So the first phase is the assess phase. This is when a prospective employee is considering coming to work for you. They're looking at your job listing, your advertisement, the careers page on your website. They're maybe having conversations with people that already work at your organization. They're checking on LinkedIn to see who they might be connected to that is already an employee. They're going through your interview and application process, submitting their resume, starting to have those conversations with you. In this phase, our goal is to give them a taste or an experience of what it's going to be like if they actually become an employee. After the assess phase, we move to the accept phase. The accept phase has two component pieces. We, as the employer, say, you're the one I want. So we make an offer. And if we're lucky, that person accepts our offer, right? So what are we doing to deliver the kind of offer that is going to compel them to accept? We then come to phase three, Gino. Now, phase three is one that in the customer context is very familiar. Buyer's remorse. Almost all of us have heard of buyer's remorse. I've coined a new phrase and would like to introduce folks to a new phrase called new hire's remorse. Okay? It's the exact same thing as buyer's remorse. It's that we begin to doubt the decision we just made immediately after making it. So how does that work? We extend the offer. They accept the offer. We're like, woohoo, we've got the new employee. They're going to be starting in 2 weeks. Meanwhile, at the new employee's house, they're going, should I have negotiated harder? I think I got a good deal, but I'm not sure if I got a good deal. I could have asked for more time off. I could have asked for a little more salary. Or because most people that we're excited to extend an offer to are interviewing for other jobs as well. They might have said, well, I was waiting to hear back from those other two companies. I had great interviews there, but I felt like I had to accept this one. But what if an offer comes in later from them? Should I have jumped to that? We're in a state of joy and euphoria and excitement about this new hire. They're in a state of new hire's remorse. They're uncertain, they're scared, they're fearing whether or not this was a right choice. So what are we doing to address that? We then come to phase four, okay? Phase four is the activate phase. This is the first day on the job. This is the only phase in the eight phases that lasts a single day. And that is the first day when they show up to work. What are you doing, in the immortal words of country music legend Bonnie Raitt, to give them something to talk about? What are you doing to create such a great first day that they're like, oh, I made the right choice. This is the place. Not only is this the place for me now, I can see myself being here for years to come. We then come to phase five, Gino. Now, phase five is where most organizations start to fall off the rails. This is the acclimate phase. This is when we're getting a new employee up to speed. The typical business thinks about training and onboarding a new employee for somewhere between 1 and 3 days. We want to invest 1 to 3 days to get you up to speed, and then we hope you'll stay here for a minimum of 3 years. Folks, these things are relational. You can't do 3 days and expect much more than 3 additional days of service, right? We've got to continue to show them the ropes, to continue to make them comfortable with their role, the requirements, the responsibilities, and the relationships that they're going to be maintaining and having in this business. The four R's. We had the 3 A's in school, reading, writing, and arithmetic. Those three R's. These are the four R's, right? Roles, requirements, responsibilities, and relationships. We then come to the accomplish phase. This is when the employee achieves the goal they had when they originally decided to come work with us. See, every employee has some goal they have, whether that's a new title, a raise, a better feeling in life, more responsibility, more autonomy. If as their employer, we're not tracking that, we're not paying attention to what they're hoping to accomplish, not only are we going to miss if they've made the progress to it and achieved it, but we're going to fail to celebrate with them when they do. And that's a crucial key part of long-term employee engagement and retention, is that as the employer, we're celebrating the major milestones that they achieve in their professional careers. We then come to the adopt phase, where the employee becomes loyal to us and only us. They're committed. They're not going to take those recruiters' calls. They're bought in. And last, after all of these seven phases, we come to the eighth phase, the final phase, the holy grail, nirvana, the advocate phase, when an employee becomes a raving fan of our organization. They're going on Glassdoor and writing reviews. Whenever we have an open position, they're referring their friends, their colleagues, the people they've worked with on other jobs who they know are amazing to come work with us. Most employers want their employees to be advocates. The problem is they want them to start advocating 2 days after they've been on the job. That's not the way it works, friends. You've got to put in the time. You've got to consistently deliver remarkable experiences to build the trust with that employee for them to be willing to put their name, their social capital on the line to say nice things about you publicly and refer their friends to come work. So those are the eight phases.
Before we started recording, Joey told me that he made the eight phases all A's because Jake wouldn't be able to remember them unless he made them all A's. So since this is the Joey and Gino show, I'm allowed to say that, Jake. You're not here, brother. I'm missing you. But there's a lot of meat in those eight phases. And the one that really stuck out to me, and as you're listening to this, I want you to say to yourself, what phase am I weak in? Or did I even know these phases? Or where should I get better? Or where am I really kicking ass at? That's really important as you're diagnosing them. And if you didn't know them, Jake and Gino didn't know them 3 or 4 years ago at all. And we sort of had some type of plan, some type of system. But once we read the book, we were able to diagnose them and outline them. But for me, the affirm phase, what would Lego do in that part of that phase to make it? Because like you said, you're just going to give up the next 3 years of your life working somewhere. Did I make a mistake? Did I ask for enough money? Is the culture in that company really worth it? Could I have gotten a better job somewhere else? What can companies do, or what does Lego do in that phase?
Well, if I may, Gino, and I'm happy to share about Lego, but I'd love to tell a different story, only because some people might have heard the Lego story and said, oh, Joey, sure, that's fine and dandy. They're a multi-billion-dollar privately held company operating out of Denmark. You don't understand. My business is, you know, $2 million operating out of Central Florida, and I've got 12 employees. There's no way I'm going to be able to do this. So let's tell a different story. Let's tell a story about a Canadian telephone company. Now, I'm going to not share their name to protect the guilty here. So there's a Canadian telephone company, and they hire folks for their call center. Okay. Now, I don't know if you've ever worked in a call center, Gino. I've spent some time in a call center. It is not a fun place to work. Okay. It's a challenge. The turnover rate in call centers is astronomical. My good friend Heather Arthur goes to work at this telephone company, and when she shows up, she finds out that 22% of the people they hire are not making the 100-day anniversary. 22% of their hires are gone 3 months later. This is unbelievable. And she dives deep into it, and she realizes that of all the people that are leaving, half of those are leaving without making a single call in the call center, without picking up the phone once. They're leaving in the first 6 weeks of training. Why? Because they're not bought in. They're not connected. They get hired. They go right into training. They don't feel any personal bond to their coworkers. They're there with a bunch of other newbies who kind of don't know what they're doing. And it's a big problem. In fact, I call this case study the $10,000 phone call, because they're losing $10,000 per employee. That's what it costs them to find and hire and train an employee. And if that employee doesn't answer one phone call in the call center, they've lost $10,000. Which wouldn't be that bad of a thing, except they're losing 10 of those per month. They're losing $100,000 a month in employees not making it to the point where they pick up the phone. So what are they doing? Well, they decide that they're going to pick up the phone. It's a telephone company after all, right? When a new employee is hired, shortly after being hired, but before their first day, in that affirm stage, right, where they're doubting the decision they just made, they get a phone call from their new manager. Their manager says, hey, we haven't met yet, but I am super excited to have you on the team. In fact, the whole team is excited to have you on the team. And in fact, I'm just going to send you a text message of a little video. and they send a video of the whole team cheering and welcoming this new person. And they send some photos from team outings that they've done and team bonding events. And they show some pictures with maybe an empty seat at the table. And they're like, hey, this seat's for you when you get here. We're so excited. Good luck with your 6 weeks of training. We're going to be there to meet you on the other side. We're thrilled to have you on the team. They show that they care. Here's what happens. They implement this program. And in the first hiring class, no one quits. And in the second hiring class, no one quits. And the third one, no one quits. And next thing they know, they realize they have zero people quitting. 0%, down from 22% that are quitting in the first 100 days. Why? Because they feel bought in. They feel they matter as an individual. They feel that even though they're part of a big company, the company cares about them as an individual. Now, the reason I share this story is not because any of you are running telecom companies, to my awareness. But in that affirm stage, what are you doing to let the newly hired employee know that you're eager and excited to have them on the team? You're ready to welcome them. You're prepared. You're talking about them already. You're holding space for them already. You're clearing off a desk. You're getting for them already. As opposed to, hey, show up on the first day and work and we'll see how it goes.
Mm-hmm. And it gets better. Sounds like an infomercial because 22 goes down to zero. But what about the people that stay on that aren't costing them money, but they're doing a terrible job picking up a call and they don't really want to be there at all? You're alleviating that pressure as well. And it's also fun. You're creating some type of culture within the organization where other employees have gone through it. And now it's like, hey, let's welcome this person on. It's the newbie. And I don't want to hear the excuse that Lego is a multi-billion dollar company. Go do and see what Lego's doing. Rip off and duplicate what they're doing because it doesn't cost that much more money to send out a freaking video out to everybody and get your whole team together. It's creativity. It's ideas, not the money that you need to focus on. Am I right, Joey?
Gino, not only are you right, as usual, but we prove this in the book, right? The book has over 50 case studies. Over half of those are from companies with less than 100 employees. And that's by design. Some people say to me, well, Joey, there's case studies in here of companies I haven't heard of. Exactly. That's intentional. Because I know people are going to go, well, it's easy for Amazon or for, you know, Lego or for this big company to do it. What about my little company? There's little companies in there. One of my favorite things that I put into the book is in the first chapter, there are two charts. One chart lists all the case studies by employee number. So you can say, well, we've got 20 employees. What other case studies in this book have about 20 employees? So you can see folks who are similarly situated and sized and probably have similar budgets, similar types of challenges, et cetera, based on employee size. The other chart lists them by revenue. Because sometimes we say, Joey, I don't have billions of dollars like Lego does. How will I do this? Well, if there's a company that's making less than $1 million a year and you're making $8 million a year, I guarantee you can do all the things that the companies that are less than a million can do because you've got more resources than they do. So there's, I promise you, there's something for everyone, and you are spot on, Gino. Steal these ideas. Most of them only require investments of time and creativity. They don't require big investments of money.
When should a company start implementing this employee journey? Because like you said, some of them may say they're too small or some of them may too soon advance. And like, give me an idea of how to do that. It can be so overwhelming for somebody to be hearing all this information going, I need to do this tomorrow. But how do you break it down? Where should you start in this journey?
I like to look at two things, Gino. I like to look at who's on your team now and who's going to be on your team next. If you're in an organization that is actively hiring right now, you have open positions, you've got roles that you're trying to fill, let's start with the experience of those folks because we want to stop the bleeding, right? We want to make sure we're getting the right people in the door, we're filling the funnel in the right way, and we're getting a solid foundation started for those people. But there may be some people that are listening or watching that say, Joey, we don't really have any open positions right now. We've got our team. We're, you know, small but mighty. We've got 8 of us. We're feeling good. We don't really need a lot of others. Or they may say, hey, we've got 100 of us. We're feeling good. We're not really looking for others. No problem. Then double down on your existing people. I understand that some people listening may have said, Joey, we've got a lot of people here that we really didn't do much in those first few phases. Like they've been here for a year or two or five or whatever. And like, we were just kind of winging it in the beginning. We didn't know. Now we're hearing this, well, we should be doing more. Great. dive deep with your adopters, your people who have been there for a while, your people who are committed. One of my favorite case studies, and it's hard to say that, Gino, because it's like saying which is your favorite kid, although let's be honest, most people have a favorite kid, all right? I'm not going to put Gino on the spot here to say which of his several kids is his favorite. But one of the case studies that I think can be implemented by any organization of any size in any industry comes from my friend, CEO Stacy Tuschel, at a company called Well-Oiled Operations. Now, they've got a smaller team, just over a dozen people. I think they're at about 15, 16 right now. And they have a company org chart. Now, pretty much every company has an org chart, right, Gino? It says, oh, here's the boss, here are the department heads, here are the people that work from, so that employees can kind of see where things are going. Well-Oiled Operations is a different type of business. They have a future org chart. What I mean by that is the CEO creates the org chart that the company will have 3 years from now. Now, some of those positions, most of those positions aren't filled yet, but the CEO has a vision of where it's going. She knows, hey, we're going to have this new department or this new product or this new service, and she fills out the roles they will need to support those. And then every year at their annual meeting, they present the three-year plan for the future, which a lot of companies do, right? Hey, here's our vision of where we're going, And the problem is our employees struggle to see where they fit in that vision. They may buy into the vision 100%, but they're like, well, will I have a job in that vision? And what about my department? And what if I like what I'm doing now, but 3 years from now, I probably want to be doing something bigger, better, smarter, more interesting. Will I have to be in the same position? Or they're in a job where they're looking at their boss and they're going, my boss is 4 years older than me, and the typical person in this role retires at age 60, and my boss is 34. You mean to tell me I got to wait around 26 more years before I'll be able to have my boss's position when they retire? No, no, no. With the future org chart, you can map your own career path in any way you want. So anybody out there listening who you have a vision, you have an idea of where you're taking your business, I can almost guarantee your employees don't have as clear of an idea of what that vision is, or more importantly, where they fit in that vision. Last thing I'll say to this point, which is research from the Work Institute on why people quit. You ask most leaders, why did that person quit? They'll say, oh, they got more money somewhere else. Oh, they got a better deal. They got a better package. They went somewhere else. And that is true 9% of the time. 9% of all workers globally quit for more money. So you are absolutely right. Some of them do quit for more money. But that's 9%. And the kind of guy I am, Gino, you know this. I look at this and I go, but what about the 91%? I'm interested and I want to give due credence and, you know, thought to the nine. But what about the 91%? Is there anything I can do over there? Well, there's one reason that 23% of the people give for quitting. 23%. So if you were to fix this, it's almost like 3Xing your 9% problem of they leave for more money. You know what that reason is?
Nope.
I didn't have a clear understanding of my role in this company in the future. The future org chart solves this problem. You can spend an hour today creating a future org chart, share that with your employees, and share and stop 23% of your people from leaving because now they have a picture, an image of what their future in this organization could be. And when they see something, what Stacy also does, which is brilliant, is she says, and when you look at this chart, if you see a role that you'd like to have, come tell me. So she had an employee one time that came and said, you know, as a hobby, I like photography. I'd really love it if my job was about photography, but I'm working over here in customer service. She said, oh my gosh, I didn't know you loved photography. Thanks for telling me. Let's start to get you some reps taking photos of our products and taking photos of our events, because 3 years from now, we envision needing a full-time photographer. And that could be the job for you. But let's make sure you're getting the classes, the training, the reps to do it. Gino, do you think that employee is going to want to stick around? Because they've just shared what their hobby, their interest, their passion, their love is, and their boss has said, oh my gosh, we've got a place for you. And now that employee is being trained in photography instead of being trained in customer service, which they're happy to do and they're good at, but it's not their love. And now we're going to be able to get them to the right seat on the bus, doing the thing they absolutely love. That's how you build long-term engagement and advocacy from your people.
And once again, it gets even better because these are the employees that you want to keep, the 23%, because they want to be there. They just don't know where they fit. And if you give them the opportunity to say, where would you like to be in this organization? Those are the ones who are proactive. Those are the ones that you want to keep. And sometimes you lose them before you even have the opportunity. We're going to take a quick time out to hear from our sponsors, but I'm going to follow up with a bunch of questions on leadership and continue this conversation. So we'll be right back.
Jake and Gino's Multifamily Mastery 6 is coming to the Gaylord Palms in Orlando, Florida this October 14th and 15th. Join Jake and Gino as they welcome special guests like Chris Voss, Luke Wren, David Green, and many more. Discover Jake and Gino's three-step framework for real estate success, enabling students to accumulate $4 billion in assets. MM6 is the multifamily event of 2023 that you do not want to miss. Go to jakeandgino.com/MM6 to reserve your tickets today.
Joey, you touched upon leadership and what leaders can do with the org chart. How else do you see leaders failing as far as their customer? For one thing, the ignorance. I think as I can blame ignorance when we started Jake and Gino, I didn't understand the customer journey. But where are their holes? Where are the mistakes do you see leaders making?
Yeah, let me share one, Gino, that is something that I too, as a leader, have been guilty of doing. I'm embarrassed to admit this, but it's true. And is something that can change dramatically just by your commitment. So many leaders, as part of their vision of managing their team, have one-on-one meetings with their employees. Some call those annual reviews, some call them biannual reviews, some call them the weekly check-in. Doesn't matter what you call it, but you have a one-on-one with that person where the vision of that one-on-one is to invest some time in them and to make sure they're on the right page and answer any questions they have and, you know, really make it about what matters to them and where things are going. Great, we have those. We schedule them. And then we cancel them. We say, oh my gosh, I got a call from a client. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to push that meeting. Or, oh, hey, I know we were supposed to meet today, but I really didn't get enough time to plan on that. Let's meet next Thursday instead. When we cancel one-on-one meetings with our team, the message that sends is there is something more important than you. There is something more valuable to me than you. Now, I understand that there may be circumstances where due to an emergency, someone's in the hospital, something has really blown up in a terrible way, where we need to ask our employees' indulgence to shift a meeting or to cancel a meeting. But all too often, leaders are canceling those for things that they don't need to cancel them for reasons that don't make sense, for reasons that only say to the employee, hey, I know I said you were important, but what I'm going to show you is that you're not. You should be doing one-on-one meetings with your people at a minimum of twice a year in a full-blown 360 annual review mode where that conversation is all about their role in the organization today and their role in the organization in the future. And you should walk into that meeting as the leader with the type of commitment and enthusiasm and planning and strategic thinking that you would walk into the meeting with your biggest client. Why? Because that one employee can have more impact on your revenues, your morale, how your business operates than any single client you have. We need to stop taking our people for granted and move them further up the list of priorities. Because if you take care of your people, they will take care of your clients, your vendors, the other folks that you're doing business with, your community, the marketplace. We got to invest in our people.
And as leaders, having empathy and understanding what your employee wants, they'll be more trustworthy, they'll be more forthcoming, and they'll want to work harder. And you're there just listening to them and trying to help them with their future. So I think that's a great piece of advice. I love that. Joey, you hear a lot of people nowadays saying, oh, these millennials, these employees, they're terrible, they're difficult. hasn't really changed from the last 40 or 50 years. I think the structure has changed where companies were more of long-term. We say for a company for 40, 50 years, it was just ingrained in you. You worked the company. There was some loyalty from the company, loyalty to the employee. You worked there and you died. I personally think if I look back at it, I think the 2008 recession, maybe sooner, I think that really changed the ballgame for a lot of people because it just meant downsizing. Technology all of a sudden started coming in full swing. You know, working remotely started happening back then. And I saw myself at the restaurant and all these things were changing and I was the mom and pop. Can you give me an assessment of what you think the employee, if there's any changes or, you know, I just struggle with that myself because I don't think there is. I just think the times are a little bit different and we need to adapt.
Gino, I totally agree with you. To place all the blame on the millennials is just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. There's no logic. You know, you just sound like an angry old person, yes. Right? You don't hear millennials saying millennials are the problem, right? Mm-hmm. When I hearken back to, you know, we think even 50 years ago, 100 years ago, the people that are the older adults that have been in the workplace for a while are always complaining that these young whippersnappers just don't know how to work, you know? And, oh, I walked to school both ways uphill in the snow and had no shoes. And look how I did it. I get it. You had a tough upbringing. It was amazing that you survived. But so did these other folks, okay? Everybody's got a story to tell. Let's take it out of the emotion and look at the data and look at the research because I think we can find the truth in the data. Couple things. Number one, engagement by current employees is at the lowest levels it has been in recorded history. That's just not millennial employees. That's all employees across the board. Number two, most employers have made this problem themselves. What I mean by that is it used to be when, Gino, when you and I, when our fathers and mothers were in the workplace, if they went to work somewhere, they were going to work there for 30, 40 years. They were going to get the gold watch. They were going to get the retirement party. Mm-hmm. To your point, in the recession in 2008, and I would posit this even started earlier in the 80s and 90s, the go-go days when things were going, employers quit showing loyalty to their people. Mm-hmm. Pensions were raided. People were fired at will, mass layoffs, mass exodus with no severance packages, no thinking of the future, no care, no concern. We're asking our employees to be loyal to us, but most employers in the offer letter they send have a sentence or two that says, and this is a reminder that you are an at-will employee and this relationship can be terminated at any time for any reason. I'm sorry, Gino, but this is like going on a date and saying to somebody, hey, I really like you. You know, seems like we could have a great relationship. In fact, I'd like to get married. But by the way, I have the right to end this marriage at any point without any notice to you on a whim just by sending you a certified letter. Are you interested in a relationship? No. No one in their right mind would be interested in that relationship. And then if I had the audacity to complain, well, this person isn't showing loyalty to me. You've been showing disloyalty from the offer letter. I'm not saying you have to keep every employee forever. Okay. The book is called Never Lose an Employee. It's not called Keep All the Employees. Okay. Okay. Let's be clear. Because people ask me all the time, they're like, well, Joey, what about the employees that you want to fire that should quit? Great. But you wouldn't call those lost employees. Lost employees are the ones that you're like, oh man, they got away. Where we would be if they were still here. I so wish we were still in relationship. I so wish they were still part of the team. We've made this problem as employers ourselves. Stop blaming the millennials.
I love that. Joey, I could talk to you for another 3 or 4 hours. I mean, the Joey and Gino show could go on for the next few hours. But before we sign off, let everyone know where they can learn more about you, more about your books, more about, I know you've done trainings. I know you give seminars and live events, and you've done fantastic work. So where can the listeners get more information?
Oh, Gino, I so appreciate that. The new book is called Never Lose an Employee Again. The first book was called Never Lose a Customer Again. It's available wherever you get books, okay? And one of the things that was really important to me as an author is we had the hardcover, the ebook, and the audiobook release on the same day. So however you like to consume books, it's available for you wherever you like to buy books, whether that's an indie bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, wherever, we've got the book for you. If you want to learn more, you can come to joeycoleman.com. That's J-O-E-Y, like a baby kangaroo or a five-year-old, you know. Coleman, C-O-L-E-M-A-N, like the camping equipment, but no relation, joeycoleman.com. There you're going to find opportunities to dive deeper into employee experience and customer experience. There's videos to watch. There's downloads to access. I just want to be a resource to folks to enhance the experiences they're delivering, whether that's for their customers or their employees or for the ones that frankly are smart enough to know that they need to be paying attention to both.
And we all do. Listen, we want to thank all the listeners for spending part of their day with me and Joey and allowing us into your homes. And really, a big thanks again to Joey Coleman for being a terrific guest. Joey, want to thank you. Have a good day, brother. Appreciate
it. Thanks so much. Thanks for letting me be a three-peat. And thanks to everybody who is listening in, watching in. Hopefully, you got some ideas how to create even better experiences for your folks in the first 100 days and beyond.
Take care, everyone.